Well, for the past 2 weeks, we have been joined by some of the Lower Mainland's creative and civic leaders, and today we're joined by TransLink CEO Kevin Desmond. He is fresh off a year that saw an all-time high for ridership on public transit with more than 400 million boardings. Kevin Desmond is with us in studio this morning. Good morning to you.
Morning, Stephen.
Nice to see you. Your priorities for 2018, I'm sure you have a long list. What's at the top of that list?
It is a pretty long list, but the top of the list, getting our funding program for the transit expansion fully funded. Mm-hmm. We've been working for a long time now with federal government, with the provincial government, with our mayors. Got to get that funded. Let's make progress. Let's start building the big projects. Let's start rolling out some more service. We're going to get started with updating the new long-range plan, transportation plan for the region. Really important, I think. The mayor's plan, the 10-year plan that we want to get fully mm-hmm. funded is a piece of really what has to be a larger puzzle. I believe this region is eager to think big and think about what those next big programs might look like. This summer we'll be bringing forward fare policy potential recommendation changes. We've been out in the public for now a year and a half or so. Similarly, the Independent Mobility Pricing Commission is set to release their recommendations, finding and recommendations in April or so. That will stimulate what I hope to be a really good constructive public debate. Later this year, we should be bringing on some new SkyTrain cars and throughout the end of this year and into 2019, further relief on crowding, some more bus service. I hope to bring on some, buy some double-decker buses for our suburban riders by the end of the year as well.
And tell me about going back to the funding issue, because that will determine what the future of the region looks like. Where is the money going to come from? What is the plan now for funding the major projects in the mayor's 10-year plan?
Well, first, we have a historic opportunity. The federal government has essentially pledged about $2.6 billion. The first almost $400 billion of it was in our Phase 1 program. That's fully committed. The other $2.2 billion leverages our Phase 2. The provincial government has repeatedly promised 40% funding. That's about $5 billion or so dollars from senior government that comes to this region. We would have to come up with the rest, roughly 20-25% of the rest. The mayors have proposed to the provincial government using a piece of the carbon tax to, for the regional funding. Those are the conversations that remain ongoing with Victoria.
The TransLink Mayor's Council, we saw a change in the leadership of the Mayor's Council. Derek Corrigan has now taken over as chair. And, of course, everybody has, you know, it's a weighted vote, in fact, on the council. It doesn't mean Corrigan runs things, but there's been a worry about a shift in priorities, as Mayor Corrigan has talked about there being too much focus on those big projects like the Broadway extension and like rapid transit through Surrey. Do you think those will remain a priority for the mayors?
Well, you know, this plan was put together in 2014, so mm-hmm. the plan's been around for a while, and it's gone through the mayor's council in effect repeatedly. In November of 2016, it was voted all but one vote to go forward with this plan. We've now spent tens of millions of dollars continuing on the design and procurement readiness for the light rail project in Surrey and the Broadway subway, in addition to the Patello Bridge. Mm. So we're following the policy direction from our mayors and from our board. Until and unless that policy direction changes, which I do not expect it will, we're going to continue to march on. We need to leverage that $5 billion I was just talking about. This is an historic opportunity. The time is now to get moving with these projects.
Another way TransLink is looking at raising money is through development cost charges for developers who are building near rapid transit stations. This still needs to be approved by the province, but how much funding would that provide?
So that was part of what we call our Phase 1 program. Actually, that was what was adopted by the mayors a little over a year ago. That should generate about $20 or $25 million a year. Mm-hmm. We are hopeful that the province will legislate that this year. Then we can put it in place and the money would start flowing in 2020. Absent that, we would not be able to increase service as much as we were hoping. We would use the development cost charges actually for to help debt finance the capital. But if not that, we would have to use other operating resources to debt finance. So it's an important piece of the puzzle.
And what has been the reaction from developers and from people who, you know, purchase condos? I mean, people are worried about the price per unit going up if that charge is put on top of everything else.
We've been working with the development community and many others, you know, for well over a year to help design a program that we believe really will not affect the price of housing to the consumer. We've done quite a bit of work. I think we've gotten support from many of the development community that the proposal that we put on the table is really quite modest. And I think it really amounts to the price of land that the developers have to buy, not so much what the purchaser is looking at.
Distance-based fares on rapid transit, why is it taking as long as it is to implement that, given how long we've had the Compass Card working? I mean, is it simply not a matter of setting the prices and then, you know, when you tap in and tap out, you pay whatever the set price is?
Well, you know, we already have a distance-based fare. We have three zones for SkyTrain.
Happen to cross a zone arbitrarily, say, between, you know, Joyce and Metrotown.
Correct. And that's the feedback. Yeah. You know, that is the challenge, the fairness of it. If you're doing that short trip and you happen to cross that arbitrary zone boundary, we're being thorough. I mean, that's the bottom line. Anytime you change fares, I've been around this many, many times in my previous life, there's winners and losers, and you want to try to find the right balance where you're attracting ridership, you've got strong customer satisfaction, and you maintain our revenue base. That's why we're being very, very deliberate in the program.
Do you expect you'll see ridership continue to climb in the coming year?
Well, we ended 2016 with a 4.5% increase in ridership. We're going to end 2017 with over 6%. I just saw the preliminary December numbers, which is the first year over year since Evergreen started.
Yep.
It was up 6%, even with the Evergreen effect now kind of neutralized. Do I expect a 6% growth again in 2018? That would be extraordinary. This region is one of the very, very few regions in all of North America that continues to see ridership growth. Most of North America is seeing flat or declining ridership. My colleagues throughout the throughout North America really kind of talking about how do we bolster transit ridership. We have a strong economy here. We've been adding service. So the density around our stations is helping to drive that. I don't know that that curve is sustainable, but I would expect the ridership demand will continue to grow.
Kevin Desmond, good to talk as always. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.